Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, June 4th, 2015. And I'm going to be introducing my main science topic tonight, a project in which all of you can help. And I really love my audience out there. I talk to people from my audience every week. There's either emails they send in and I communicate, or sometimes people have purchased something and I end up talking to them on the phone. But just, I'm so happy with the audience out there. They're just so happy to get this information. They're just so eager to learn, and they come up with great questions. I know this is complicated material. There's nothing easy about this radio show. There's nothing, you know, like Bic throwaway pen type of information. This is very complicated, but what I try and do is simplify it so everybody will understand it. But anyway, the main science topic, I have a project in which all of you can help. And well, once you hear it, I think you'll understand. First, every now and then in the news, someone comes up with what they think is a bright idea to put low-voltage solar in houses. Now, let me give an example of where this comes from, and some of this is a very good idea. That if you took, for example, low-voltage LEDs, like your flashlight, you can produce the equivalent light of 120-volt light bulb with 12 volts, and it's just little teeny wires, and it's very low consumption, it's a very efficient light, and you can produce equivalent lighting. So that would make one think that, well, gee, if we just wired our whole house with 12 volts, everything would be fine. Well, let me tell you something. I have lived in a house that runs on 12 volts. I also have lived in a house that of my own design and construction that took 12-volt system and converted it into 120 volts, and I had a wind system, a solar system hooked up to it, and then a backup generator which ran off of a propane tank, etc. So I've been down this road. I know all about it. But when you start running things like refrigerators and electric drills and other appliances, then all of a sudden you have a big problem because the power consumption goes up. Here's the problem. At 12 volts compared to 120 volts, you have 10 times the current, the electrical current, to deliver the same amount of power to the device. Plus there's some loss just in the conversion. So you're dealing with 10 times the amount of power loss simply to move the electrical current through the wire. That's why when we go across country, the high voltage power lines, they get them way up there, very high voltages, because you can transmit the same amount of power with much less current, and it's the current that creates the loss. It's the current times the resistance is equal to the voltage loss in the electrical cabling, and so therefore, the less current, the less power loss in transmission. So anyway, that's the reason. So let's go back to your bright idea to put 12 volts in a house. Now, okay, the cabling to do this is immense. So anyway, here is the problem. If you have, let's say, a cabin in the woods, and you have your 120-volt appliances, etc., just basic things, the cable that you need to go from your 12-volt battery pack, you might have two or three or five or six 12-volt batteries hooked together in parallel, but the cable you need to go from those batteries up to your controller is about a 1-inch diameter cable. Now, most people are not familiar with this type of cabling. The fuse that goes on this is an immense fuse. These are very expensive, and so what do you need? About, you know, you might need a 6-foot run or an 8-foot run of 1-inch copper cable. There's more copper in that one piece of cable than there is in your entire house when it's wired for 120 volt AC. So as you can see, this is not a good idea. Now, that's a cabin in the woods. Let's talk about your house in suburbia, and you want to run it on a 12-volt or a 24-volt low-voltage system. Okay, now you're talking a cable that's 2 inches in diameter. And it's not solid copper, by the way. It's many, oh, maybe eighth-inch diameter copper wires all bundled together. The connectors are extremely expensive. They have to be put on with a machine press. The fuses for this 2-inch cable are enormous and very expensive, etc. And so fusing these, plus you've got huge amounts of current, if you have a fault, then all of a sudden you're dealing with tremendous, if there's a weakened point in your connection or the connector where it connects onto your controller, if it's not quite crimped down enough, then all of a sudden you get tremendous heating because of the huge, absolutely huge amount of current running through this. So literally in a house situation, for the average person, this is not a good idea. Plus, let's look at some other practicalities. The homes in the country, in the United States, are already wired for 120. All of the appliances, if you go out to buy a drill or, you know, just something simple, a vacuum cleaner, a toaster, it's going to run off 120, and certainly you can buy 12 volt or 24 volt appliances. But if the entire country decided to do that, there's not enough supply of all of this to do this. The wiring diameter in your house would go from what it is now, I'm sure you've seen the wiring in your house, to about 10 times that, the size of the wiring. The wiring cost to rewire your house would be astronomical. So people who are preaching this simply, I don't know what they're thinking. It just is beyond me. But anyway, I wanted to talk about that as kind of a lead-in. That'll get me into the main science topic that's a related topic. The reason this came up is because I saw an article that said, will solar, in other words, solar panels, force low voltage on a national level to recode? Everybody has to have their house rewired to 12 volts. And there are some people out there that think that this might happen. And it's like, no. This isn't going to happen. And they say, well, in new construction that could be put in. No, sorry, also wrong. Really, there's not a lot of new construction going on. You would not, I absolutely tell you, you would not wire any kind of commercial building with 12 volt. It would be so horrendously expensive just to put the wiring in that it would offset any other rational benefits, of which I really don't see any. And so anyway, voltage, low voltage, and that's one of the problems, is that solar is a low voltage device just by its very nature. The solar cells put out a low voltage, and then you string these together to get even a nominal voltage. But I wanted to update something. The Tesla batteries are a high DC voltage battery. I guess they run around 400 to 500 volts DC. And that's a good thing, because then again, you're dealing with low, small wires, low current. And, you know, let me tell you, Elon Musk has got some very good, smart engineers working for him. It's just that they can't see the whole end game here with solar. They will sell lots to people who can't see the chess game for more than one move ahead. Solar is going to be a disaster until you get rid of the central power companies. And when you put in my wing generators, which is the only technology out there that's capable of replacing the centralized power plant, it's the only technology. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. But also my wing book, my wing generator book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, explains this. It goes through all of these details. Changing subjects, commentary on Tomorrowland, the recent movie with George Clooney was the main actor. And when NASA gets together with Hollywood, you get a Jules Verne type of a movie. I mean, the rocket in this thing is right out of 1912 Jules Verne futuristic movie. But also at the end, I really got a kick out of the fact that, like, supposedly this was in the future and humanity had solved all of its problems and was living at peace with the world and the universe. They show repeatedly the three-blade wind generator as if that is supposed to spark confidence and futuristic green or whatever they want to, the image they want to portray into the future. And I'm like, oh my goodness, you know, this is pure NASA baloney. And so just like I say, when NASA and Hollywood gets together, you're bound to get tremendous amounts of misinformation. And these things are subtle. These are in movies, that's in Hollywood, it's in TV programs. I saw an advertisement here for a green, let's put it this way, a green energy system, a new concept. Their picture had about 200 chemtrails crossing the sky in the picture of their product. And I'm like, oh my goodness. You know, and that tells you right there that this is a disinformation piece sent out there to lead you astray. That's all I can tell you. I'm not going to be specific about what that was. But somebody asked me this week about the big flotation devices. They put them out in the, I think there's some out in the North Sea, north of Ireland. And what they do is they bob up and down with the ocean currents or with the tides. Some of them, they're different. Some are with waves, some are with tides. And then they produce energy. They have different mechanisms for moving this energy offshore. Some are hydraulic, some are electric. But the point is that none of these will work. The expense, the infrastructure expense of putting these in is far too high for what you get out of them. They're not easy to maintain. They're offshore. They're hard to, I mean, it's just, and then they don't answer the one simple question. Will they replace, on a worldwide scale, our energy need that comes from coal, nuclear, and oil? And the answer is no. Okay, so anyway, I'm kind of back on this topic, off on a few space science topics. By the way, I put on my webpage this past week a commentary about a guy named Jacques Moule. Jacques is a French name, Jacques Moule. But at any rate, in the middle of the Mayan cities in Latin America, in Mexico and in Central America, in the Yucatan Peninsula of Mexico, and in Quintana Roo, the eastern state on the Caribbean of Mexico, there's a character. Now, I talked last week about the Mayans. The Mayans are 4-foot-tall little people, the doorways into their temples. I mean, these are little teeny, teeny people. And historically, that's the way they were. The Lacandon Indians, which I met when I was down there, I don't know how they're faring these days with modern culture moving in and all the tourism. But the Lacandons were the remnants, and these people, I described a woman last week that was like 3.5 feet tall, and she was probably weighed 35 pounds, and she looked like a little bird, and I was communicating with her and her family, etc. down there. But at any rate, in the midst of all of this, in the Mayan cities, the ruins, there's a 6-foot-tall Scandinavian-looking guy that's the central piece of, for example, Chichen Itza or other places. Jacques is a French name given by some explorers, but Jacques Moule. But you find this character just put out in the middle of the jungle in individual places. And in one scene, he's got moccasins with fringes on them, and these are in stone rock carvings, and then he's sitting with his head cocked sideways with a little offering plate on his stomach. And so they really don't know a lot about Shock or what his purpose was there, but it brings up the question, how did this 6-foot Scandinavian guy get into the middle of Mayan archaeology? So I have a note on that. It actually got moved to the archive subpage for the picture of the day. Yesterday I put up a picture of Mars, and this is very interesting. I had a note in my show notes here to talk about the fact that we have not seen any information from the 5 Mars missions, all of this information being well hidden. And so anyway, months after the pictures were taken, finally NASA released one picture of the Mars orbiter. and it shows a crater. I have this on my homepage right down there at the picture of the day section in the center column. Go see it. It's a picture of the surface of Mars, of a crater. The crater is about 70 kilometers across, and it has some blue material in the crater. Well, these are basalts that have blown in from a distance and accumulated over the rim of this crater based on the trade winds, basically the prevailing winds. And so anyway, it's a commentary about the winds, the tremendous winds that are continually eroding and changing the surface of Mars. But wait a minute, they forgot to Photoshop out the river, the meandering river that's down in the right, lower right-hand corner of the picture. It's the river is probably, it's more than a mile wide or a kilometer, a couple kilometers wide probably. And you can tell that the crater, the big crater in the picture is 70 kilometers. And so this is probably a tenth of that. This could be as much as 5, 6, 7 kilometers across. But it's a meandering river bed that swings through the right lower right corner of the picture. Pristine, just like it was there yesterday. In fact, that's the whole point, that the river beds on Mars, and I have many, many pictures of these meandering little, very delicate, pristine river beds, untouched by all of this tremendous erosion and wind erosion. And this is not just wind blowing, but this is like dust storm with sand and rock in it. And so any geological features would have been absolutely destroyed over a very short period of time, certainly billions of years. And NASA wants to tell you that Mars had oceans. They finally broke down. They had to steal my material to do it. I had so many postings on my page talking about the oceans on Mars that NASA finally, right after the New Year, good old Michael Muma, their thief in waiting, put up a posting and showing how Mars had all these oceans, exactly what I've been saying, but of course they put it billions of years ago. Well, this is just another nail in the coffin showing that the rivers on Mars, the river beds that are pristine, meandering, and you know, completely left untouched, proves that these are very young. So at any rate, go and take a look at that. That's at the center column on my homepage, jmccsci.com. And on to Mercury, the messenger spacecraft at Mercury. They're about to crash it, or maybe it already has crashed into Mercury. I haven't followed exactly when the crash date was. But at any rate, it's falling out of orbit, and it's going to eventually crash into Mercury. But my point is that these satellites, the satellite orbiting Mercury over past years, would have been a perfect satellite to confirm or disprove general relativity. And they didn't do it. At least they don't have any results. NASA is one of the bastions of standard science relativity, the Big Bang, general relativity, that is, the Big Bang. Special relativity is well proven in the laboratory, but general relativity is not. My recent course, DVD number 4, the Astrophysics, Astronomy, Space Science course, DVD number 4, goes into that in a lot of detail. But the messenger spacecraft ending its mission, and, you know, I got to give these people credit. They do a lot of super good work, but there's a lot of shenanigans that go in the behind the scenes with the data, and that's the real crime that's going on here. The engineers that build these amazing spacecraft are just amazing, but also they're kind of hamstrung because they're building onesie-twosies. Instead of one spacecraft orbiting Mercury, we should have 5 or 10, all the same. And they can be small, etc. But on to something very exciting, the New Horizons mission to Pluto. It's starting to send back, actually the first colored picture of Pluto came back this week. And so it's getting close, the July 7th or something flyby date of Pluto. I'm anxiously waiting this. I've already made some predictions dealing with some of the smaller moons of Pluto that might have atmospheres, that might have other cometary effects. electrical conditions relative to Pluto itself and in the atmosphere of Pluto itself. So very exciting, very much looking forward to that. Okay, Boeing this past week. Now, this is almost humorous. Since way early in the space program, it was well known. In fact, there was the X rocket plane back in the early days, Chuck Yeager and the Flyboys, who wanted to fly airplanes and not be astronauts sitting in a dumb capsule. They wanted to fly airplanes. The first space-borne airplanes or vehicles were literally rocket planes, and that was the idea. You'd take them up to 40, 50,000 feet with a B-52 bomber, drop them off the wing, and then the rocket plane would take off and then go up into space and then fly back down. And that was the original plan. All of a sudden, NASA, at least the visible part of NASA, went on to space capsules. There was nothing to fly. There was nothing to do. All of those pilots like Yeager left, and then NASA started developing astronauts who just sat in the space capsule. And this pushed everything in the direction of big rockets. And, of course, Wernher von Braun leading the push to build the big rocket engines and the Saturn I and the Saturn V rocket systems, which took astronauts into orbit. Whether they went to the moon or not is another question. Unverified scientific claim at NASA. But at any rate, then all of a sudden, recently, Elon Musk with SpaceX comes in, starts getting contracts, and bringing the price of delivering stuff into space brings it way down. Well, the guy, I got to give him Elon Musk, and even though I don't like him very much and I don't like his dealings, I don't like his dealings with the CIA and Google and selling his soul to the devil, but he's a good businessman. I think there's something else going on behind the scenes. The amazing success story just is a little too amazing to be a true, but be that as it may, he has brought the price of delivering products, payloads into outer space down to the point where the old boy network, the Boeing in this case, is now introducing a product where they can take it up to about 40,000 feet on a jet aircraft. These high-performance jets can just fly vertical. They can go boom, just like a rocket, up to 40,000 feet in a flash. But carrying a payload, basically a rocket payload, and going up to dropping it off, and then that payload kicks in an engine, takes it up to low Earth orbit. And so they are capable at this point of putting a 100-pound payload into outer space, which is with modern concentrated semiconducting electronics, that's quite a payload. That's a very capable piece of equipment. But oddly enough, they never talk about using the big planes like the B-17s. Why? Because they need something to compete with Elon Musk in his SpaceX program for inexpensive launches, but they don't want to get up to the B-52 program. Did I say B-17 and B-52s, the big current Air Command bombers for the United States? They don't want to get up to those because then they're going to replace all the rockets that they have to build for NASA. And so anyway, with the ability to build big planes, etc., to build big cargo planes, it's absurd to have rockets in this day and age. Of course, Burt Rutan and Richard Branson running the program out there in Mojave with the ability to go up and take a dozen or 10 tourists up into space and drop them off at a 40 to 50,000 foot altitude with a carrier vehicle. Obviously, that's the way to go into space. Very inexpensive, no big rockets, low fuel consumption, all of the great advantages there. But I thought it was rather comical that Boeing came out this week with a runway to low Earth orbit launch system. And it's what I call the NASA shell game. You never quite know where they're at because you never know really which nut the bean is under with NASA. the solar impulse airplane. And so there's, to me, there's two sides of this. I just think it's amazing. These guys are going to fly around the world in a solar powered airplane. It's just beyond incredible. Weighs 2.5 tons. I think that's the weight. It's bigger than a 747 and powered completely by solar panels and batteries. But here's the thing. It's a great idea, but they are promoting it, saying that it's to promote the use of solar energy. And, you know, there again, we come back to the fact that solar energy is not a solution. It's a Band-Aid, and it's a very bad Band-Aid. There's a Department of Energy has a web page where they're promoting small wind and solar systems for people to install them on their house. And so these are little three-blade wind generators and then solar panels. The reality is that once people start introducing things like electric cars, this is something I've talked about extensively, the solar panels and the small home systems won't cut it anymore. They're simply not going to cut it. And so there again, it forces dependency on the centralized power company. A number of weeks ago, I made a weather prediction, and I said on May 30th, the weather on Earth would explode. And of course, I always do this with a bit of hesitation, because predicting weather is just a difficult business, and you have to be very careful. You don't want to start making predictions and then be wrong. Of course, you can be wrong once or twice, but you don't want to be wrong consistently. You like to be right consistently. Well, I was right again this time, and I don't make these predictions unless I have many factors that are adding up together. So once again, just the end result is that right after May 30th, the world literally exploded in high-intensity storms. Hurricane Blanca, in fact, the National Weather Service is even saying this is an extremely intense storm. It accelerated very rapidly in a 12-hour period. It went from a small hurricane to a wild, whipping, big hurricane with a tremendously tight eye, they said only about 10 kilometers across, in extremely high wind speeds in the center of the eye of the hurricane. There were two hurricanes that formed off the western side of Mexico in the wake of this May 13th prediction. And I counted over 120 tropical storms at one time. That was 2 days ago. On the 2nd, I counted over 120 tropical storms around the world at one time. 7 of them crossed over the southern region of Japan and off into China. Just tremendously intense weather. The United States got blasted, especially the eastern seaboard. I posted a picture on my webpage of the Caribbean area, just unheard of weather, all over the place, and rain. If you were in the eastern U.S., or in the Caribbean, you were just getting pummeled with rain. In fact, the entire equatorial region of Earth was being just pummeled, hammered by rain, intense rain, and then intense windstorms. So at any rate, what was the cause of all of this? Well, back around mid-May, there was a solar flare from a CME from the sun that just missed Earth. Well, standard weather dismissed that. They said, okay, well, that's it. It missed Earth. Goodbye. Nothing happened. See you later. And I said, no, that's not correct, because analyzing the solar system, I knew that Saturn was out there just right now. We're moving into right around the 30th of May. We're moving in with a direct electrical alignment with Saturn. And then also Mercury, little Mercury, swift-footed planet Mercury, coming around, and also May 30th having an electrical alignment with Earth. Just to throw in our moon was in a full moon status, which means it was extending the Earth discharge of the solar capacitor, but leaving us completely naked on the sunward side, open to the solar wind. So here we have a cross solar system electrical discharge, and let me enumerate. Okay, so we had the Mercury coming around May 30th, then the Earth, the full moon behind Earth, and then moving out into the solar system, which I made some analysis, and I said May 30th, the pulse, that CME pulse, was going to be in the region of Saturn, discharging Saturn locally. So that was going to extend all the way from Mercury out to Saturn with Earth right in the smack in the middle. Not too difficult to predict what's going to happen, and boy, did it happen. And so this is going to last a little bit of a while, a number of days. So we're still in this discharge, but I think it's going to taper off here. It's hard to predict how long we're going to stay connected to Saturn. The moon has already moved out from full moon status. And Mercury, of course, has moved along its path around the sun, moved away, so that's no longer a factor. So right now it's just a matter of how long will we maintain a connection with Saturn out there. And I don't think it's going to be too long. So this was a rather short-lived weather splotch, but very much predictable. So once again, 100% right on my prediction, and I wish I had more people out there cheering for me, so unfortunately I have to do my own, blow my own trumpet here a bit to make note of this. The movie San Andreas apparently booked, I think it was like a record-breaking first weekend, but as other people I've talked to, Dr. Bill Deagle, other people that have seen this, that are scientists, the end result is great special effects, and some friends, other people who have seen the movie, great special effects, bad science. And so I saw a bit of it myself. I didn't see the whole movie, but I saw one scene where the land waves are moving through, and of course this is centered around L.A., etc., but the land waves are moving across the land. Well, the Earth just doesn't jump up and do this by itself. You need a comet or some extra solar system object passing nearby to cause this. So what they've tried to do, and of course Hollywood is great at this, trying to make everything happen, the Earth just jumped up and did this all by itself. Kind of in the same vein as the movie 2012. Remember back in 2012, Hollywood came out with a 2012 movie. Actually, there were quite a few of them. But the main blockbuster 2012 movie had all kinds of effects, you know, the ocean coming up over the Himalaya mountains, etc., and the monks up in the Hindu Kush or wherever it was, watching the ocean rolling over the mountainside. Great, great special effects, bad science, nothing to do with reality. I already talked about the government program that pays you now to go solar. So they're going to pay people, and everybody's getting trapped in this. I see all kinds of smiling faces on these government pages like, oh boy, isn't this great? We're going to all have solar and wind. No. This is the biggest farce on the planet. Because people are going to invest their money in this. They're going to have an installed base. And one day the centralized power company is going to call up and say, hey, you guys, none of you can use these anymore because we can't control the voltage. So at any rate, on to the main science topic. Okay, I got to take the gloves off here and get into the ring. And my wing generator project has had many phases, things going on in the background, etc. But I decided to do something, and I believe this is going to be successful, because the word, even in amongst industry giants, is that crowdfunding is the way to go for a lot of research. And so let me just give you a bit of history, but I'm going to open up one aspect of the wing generator project to crowdfunding. Now, when you donate to crowdfunding, you don't get any benefit in terms of ownership of the product or anything like that. But my wing project, I've already opened it up as an open architecture for public ability to use this. And there's a pricing structure to use the technology and develop it. But at any rate, and that's all explained in the book. And so the people who are interested in that, in fact, there's some people out there who I still have to get back to. If you're listening, if you've had some development work that's gone into a wing generator project, I'll be contacting you soon for the fees. And they're pretty nominal. For somebody who just builds a home system, it's $50. So it's very nominal. For companies that want to develop, it's really pretty inexpensive, but it depends on what they want to do with it. For big corporations, well, yeah, lots and lots of money. But for home developers, and that's what I want to concentrate on in this project, is that people who are engineers, people who are good, maybe welders, maybe backyard mechanics, people that have installed their own solar systems or wind systems and are familiar with those type of systems, alternative energy, battery packs, what have you, controllers, inverters, etc., would be the kind of people that could jump in and build something. And like I say, if it's for an individual or a couple people or in the neighborhood, $50 is the fee. But as you get up and start building bigger systems, then the fee for people out there to develop is going to go up. But what I'm concentrating on now, eventually, of course, the wing generators will get to be 1,000 feet tall, 1.5 times the height of the Golden Gate Bridge pillars. There's two giant, giant pillars that hold up the Golden Gate Bridge. And look at those and go up another 1.5 times that distance. And that would be the height of the big wing generators. I don't want to confuse this with wind generation, which is a total disaster technology. So wing generation, and the big ones will come eventually, the ones that will replace nuclear power generators and coal-fired plants, etc. One of these replacing one of the wing generators replacing one or two of the nuclear or coal-generated plants, etc. And so at any rate, I'm opening up a mid-sized, actually kind of a small-size, wing generator project to crowdfunding. And the reason I want to do this is because I want to take this through to testing to where we can actually market these. This is the kind of system that could run, if they were large suburban houses, maybe three of them. But if they were like a farm, somebody out on a ranch that wanted to have all of their own power and then sell some back to the power company, a bit of excess, but have way more than sufficient power for their own operation, strictly from wind, this would be the system. It's what I call the 12-meter. So it's in feet, that's 39 feet in diameter. And I've already worked on small systems. I've worked on larger systems. But this is the one I want to do crowdfunding. The reason I want to do crowdfunding is because it's going to take a bit more effort, because this is one that's going to have some testing done, some certification, some other issues like that. And those are expenses. Those are real expenses. So a 12-meter wing generator, if you want to just get an idea of what these look like, go to my sales page, jmccsci.com, click on the sale link, the secure web ordering subpage, and then go down to the blue table on the right-hand side. Down below the new DVD, you'll find the wing generator book in the cover, and you can see some photos, etc. But the point is that with crowdfunding, now I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with crowdfunding, but these have been very successful. And all the information about how much I'm looking to raise and everything will be on my webpage in the link. I've already got the crowdfunding site. Now, these are independent sites. This is not going to be done on my website. It's going to be done on a crowdfunding website that is a public crowdfunding site. And so all of the rules and the regulations, et cetera, there comply with the webpage where this will be posted. So at any rate, you have to go to my webpage. That's the best way to get the link to this, so it's all composite. But I'm going to start promoting this far and wide. I'm going to be doing a lot of radio interviews. I was going to release a new book here, and I thought, you know, I just got too many things going on. I'm going to hold the release of that book back at least a few months, and I'm going to concentrate. I have to concentrate on certain things, and the topic of the hour is the wing generator and this crowdfunding project. And like I say, this is a size that, let me just explain what this wing generator size would do. It's a 12 meter diameter, and it would produce enough energy, like I say, for three very large suburban homes. These are the kind of mega homes, say, you might find in Texas. But I don't expect anybody in suburbia to put up one of these wing generators to run their houses. I'm just trying to give you a level of power for one of these. But, for example, if somebody has a ranch, if somebody has a farm or lives out in a rural area where you might have 10 to 20 houses, this system could provide all of your energy. And the design with it, the voltage control, I've already got the voltage control scenarios down very well. I've been working on these, and so a tremendous amount of the legwork has already been done. The trick now is to get these into a commercial mode. Another reason for the funding is because all of the materials that go into this commercial model will be very good, high-quality materials. Some parts actually being airplane grade materials. So you can see that this is a unit that would be made to run for 100 years or more without really much maintenance. These are going to be a very high-end, high-quality, off-the-shelf, you just plug them in and run with them. Once they're set up, you're going to have power for 10 to 20 houses. And where we're actually concentrating on these is outside of the United States, actually. And so I've already targeted quite a few locations where these will be installed. But and that's the benefit of that also, is you don't have all of the in-United States zoning and codes and everything else that goes with it. Much of that is really unnecessary. It's more to keep you from doing anything than to actually create safety for the public. And so at any rate, go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. And I believe this, I've done some crowdfunding before, and I didn't have enough time to really put into it. But this crowdfunding effort, I did that mainly to get my feet wet, to get some experience with the whole process, and now I have that. So now I'm going to go out and really push this wing project, because it is the solution for all our energy needs worldwide, eventually replacing the coal, the nuclear, and oil. And so I've talked before, I've been kind of prepping the public for this. I talked before about alternative energy and some of the downfalls of alternative energy systems like solar. But the wing system that I'm proposing here is going to be the one that, let me talk about something else, another technology. Let me talk about sailboats. Now, if you go out to the world of sailboats, something that I've been involved in my life, not now so much because I don't have time. It's something I really love to do. But the 33-foot sailboat is kind of like if you took the and charted the number of boats sold versus the length of the boat, you could get up to 70, 80, 90, 100 feet or up into the 150-foot class, really mega yacht-type sailboats. Okay, or you could get down to the smaller 20-foot, 25-foot, that kind of 27-foot boats, the McGregors that sold many, many, many boats with the swing keels, you know, for recreation. But going on the ocean, and that's really a bad, bad choice, but it is the one that sold the most, would be a 33-foot boat. Now, if I were going to go on the ocean, the last size of boat I would get into would be a 33-foot boat, because your average wave size is perfect, so that boat is pounding into the waves viciously all the time. And so I used to be out in the Caribbean, and I'd see these sailors come in, and they'd leave Miami in their dream boat, and they'd get over to the Virgin Islands or Puerto Rico or their first stop, because you couldn't stop in Cuba. And you didn't want to go around Cuba. The smart people actually went west out of Miami, down around the southern end of Cuba, had beautiful sailing winds and no waves, and they actually got there faster by that technique. But most people chose a 33-foot boat because that was in. But anyway, relating this to the wing generator, the 12-meter, that's about a 39-foot diameter wing generator, will probably be the one that, in terms of sales, number of sales over the lifetime of this product, which will be in the next 100 or 200 years, that's the one that's going to sell the most. So maybe you're starting to understand why I want to concentrate on the 12-meter wing generator. That's why I want crowdfunding, because that's the one that's going to take this thing and it's going to take it ballistic. And when we see this, I'm expecting one day Elon Musk is going to come up and knock on my door, and he's going to say, Jim, I'm going to cut you a deal. And I'm going to say, Elon, no. Because you're dealing with the devil, Elon. If you drop all your other stuff and become a real human again, then I'll deal with you. Or somebody else might come up and try and buy it out. And the thing is that this project, the Wing project, is already in the public domain. And so I'll tell Elon, if you want to build some, you compete against me, you pay me, and you can build as many as you want. But you're going to be competing against me in my designs, and I'm going to make sure that these babies get out there and get used, and that none of your CIA buddies can come in and stifle this, because they represent the energy interests of the world. So anyway, if you can see where this is going, or Warren Buffett or any of the other boys that think they're big in wind generation. So at any rate, but this is the one, it's the 12-meter model that is going to sell the most in over the years. Now, I also suspect that there's one that's the 100-foot model. Well, that's nice, but the reality is, and I've said this before, the way things are structured today, some people have the image that say they are out on the ranch or they're on the farm or something like that, out in the middle of Kansas where the wind blows all the time, or they're down in the southwest corner of New Mexico or Nevada where the wind just blows like crazy down those big valleys all the time. They have an image of putting up a big wind system and then selling it back to the power company. Well, I've got news for you. You're going to be selling it at below wholesale costs, and they're actually not going to let you do it, because then they're not going to be able to burn their high energy content fuels and sell it to the public. So they're going to find a way to block these people from doing this. And so the only way these are going to come into vogue is when eventually we put in the big systems that completely replace the central power companies. But in the meantime, the guy that thinks he's going to put in a vast solar array or a big wing generator and sell that energy back to the energy company is mistaken. And so that's why I would love to sell a bunch of 100-foot models or 150 or 200-foot models that really would put out some serious power, way, way more, and consistently way more than the 1.5-megawatt three-blade wind generators that are out there. But it's just not going to happen. It's not in the business plan. It's not the business plan. So the 12-meter model, however, is one where a guy's got a ranch, and he's got a serious operation, a farming operation, wants to convert a lot of his operation, automate it with electricity, then that's the guy that's going to buy the 12-meter model, the 12-meter diameter wing generator, and it's going to fulfill all of his needs. And if, with the, what's left over, he can maybe sell it to a neighbor, run a cable over or something like that, or find other some other interesting use, maybe run a machine shop where he can do some machine work on the side, which he never could do before because the electric would have been too expensive. So at any rate, this is the kind of thing that the 12-meter model is the, I've done a lot of homework on this, this is the one, it's like the 33-foot sailboat. It's in all practical uses, I mean, it wouldn't be the one that you would choose. But for if you could include all of the factors, the fact that the bigger ones, you would have excess power and you try and sell it back, put it back on the grid, and you wouldn't get anything for that extra excess energy, then, okay, bad idea. So, you know, it's not going to be a big seller. It would be like having a mainframe computer with a certain speed of computer and way too much memory, or vice versa. Not enough memory for the size computer's central processor that you have. There has to be a balance. And the 12-meter system is the one. Okay, so I've chattered about the system enough and the end result, etc. But now I want to talk a little bit about the crowdfunding aspect of this. What I would like and what I'm requesting, and hopefully my wonderful audience out there will comply with this, I would like everybody to make some type of donation, whether it's $10, or I think $5 is the minimum. But I want everybody to be part of this. And as I said before, it's not like there's a investment. This is not a stock investment. There's no stock return or any investment return that'll come back. Crowdfunding is saying that I support this. I think this is a great idea, and I want to put my two cents in where there and hope that this guy succeeds. There was the one project a while ago. These people invented a new honey cage, these guys in Australia, and they ran up a $3 million gain. Now, I'm not looking for $3 million. I'm not looking anywhere near that, nor do I want that much money. I want to get this project going, and then I want the project to run itself for the benefit of mankind. And once these installations are in place and people see them working, now that's the trick. Often these remote locations, it's going to be just a matter of time until the whole energy system in the world comes crashing down, because it's in this world of internet, etc. I mean, there are no secrets anymore. And so that's what people are doing. They're not individually putting in enough to where that's going to, they think, well, that's my $5 is not going to make a difference. What it tells other people is that there are other people out there that are saying, yes, I'm going to put my 2 cents worth in here. And of course, if you want to donate more, that's fine if you have the wherewithal. But I'll tell you something. I know I'm in this business. I'm in the business of selling, for example, water filters. People are struggling out there today. People are not doing well. And so, like, my water filter prices are very low. I'm keeping them very low. I had the end of the world sale, which, by the way, let me just comment on, was very successful. I had to raise the prices after that sale ended, but I didn't raise them a lot. And I'm not going to raise them very high. Because people are struggling out there. People are watching their money. They're watching their nickels and dimes today. They're watching their paper clips, is an old expression in business. And literally, I've been in companies where they were counting paper clips. It's pretty scary. So anyway, I know people are not doing well out there. People are hurting. But that's why crowdfunding is great, because if you get thousands of people each putting in $5 or $10, okay, that starts to become successful. That's something that allows you to go out and buy a better material for the wings, a better material for the hubs, or better bearings, or better controller for the electrical part of the structure, the electrical components that you need to control the voltage and the current output of the wing device. And, so you know, the more testing you can have done, the more certifications that you can have done. So all of those things add up. And so, and like I say, I've already planned this so this is being done at the very lowest cost possible. The people who I have a wonderful team of people who are going to be helping assemble this, working at, you know, literally dirt, because they are interested in seeing this succeed. They have faith in it. They see this. They're saying, I want to put some time in this, and I want to be part of this, so that when it succeeds, then they're going to be part of that also. And so in the people out there, they can say, yeah, I helped Jim McCanny get this thing going. And let me say something. I could do this, for example, and make smaller home models and try and market those, get them out there and make money that way, and then move into the larger ones, etc. But there's the industry is wrought with problems. And also, the anytime you have volume sales, and it's just, you know, there's a whole marketing thing that you have to look at here. I've looked at this top to bottom, sideways, and inside out, and backwards, and every other way. And it's the 12-meter model is the one that's going to take this and send it ballistic. So believe me when I say that this is the one that we have to develop to change the world. And then what's going to happen? Once we get these in place and the people see the efficiency of these and the fact that they can, once we make them bigger, they can start taking over individual power plants in small remote areas. That's the next step. And so that people will be completely off of the grid. They're just going to cut that cable to the power central power company, completely off the grid. Then people will see this. All of a sudden, we're going to realize that we can run the world. And all of a sudden, people in those little remote areas are going to be running with electric motor scooters and electric cars. And all of a sudden, people are going to be going, wait a minute, they're doing all of this with that winging a generator. And the word is going to spread, and it's just going to take over. And then, by the way, Elon Musk is going to be smiling all the way to the bank, because his solar systems are going to be very compatible with the wing systems that are going to be in the centralized location. And the location of the power voltage control is going to be at the house, not at the central power generation company. So anyway, go to the webpage, jmccsci.com. That's seven letters, JMCC, S is in science, C is in Charlie, I is in indigo.com. And follow the link to the crowdfunding and drop a few dollars in there and watch this grow. And I'm going to be promoting this all over. I'm going to be on a lot of radio stations. I know Dr. Bill Deagle is already very excited about it. He's going to be promoting it. So this baby is going to take off, and let's get this thing rolling, get the world energy problem solved. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.